Boker Tov world. Today's daf in Masechet Ketuvot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Ayin Beit. And we had spoken to Richie, who is not here. We were going to allow him to start the Halakha Mishnah, but we're just going to go on, teach him a lesson. Okay, so we got up to the Mishnah, Ve'elo Yotzot Shelo B'Ketuva. So we've been talking up till now about the way in which the ketuvah is there to ensure really two things. First of all, it's an expression of the idea of shaktu, of the way that Chazal put together a long-term type of contract to ensure that the woman is not going to be taken advantage of and that she can't just be dumped. And meanwhile, that provides her with all types of protections and insurance and mezainis and medical care and so on and so forth. But remember that there was another essential function to a ketuvah, and that is that by the very virtue of the fact, Shaloti Akala Beinav Lahotziah, the fact that he is in a matzav where he cannot easily just dump her, that of course is the difference between having a marriage or just having a loose relationship. And this is what, as we learned earlier, that someone who has relationships without a ketuvah, so then even if he had a kiddushin, but below ketuva, it's bi'ilato, it's bi'ilat znus. Why? Because the meaning of znus is the casualness, is the lack of commitment, the lack of real involvement. So because of that, in a situation where the woman is actively undermining the nature of her marriage, so then the ketuva is not going to apply. And those kind of things, remarkably, are only associated directly with the marriage per se. In other words, things that you would expect would be absolutely grounds for divorce. A guy finds out that his wife is a mechalala Shabbos or whatever. That's not grounds for divorce without a ketuvah. It has to be something that is going to directly impact upon him, as we're going to see from the way that the Gemara works out this Mishnah. But those women who lose their ketuvah are specifically women whose behavior implies a lack of commitment to the marriage. So she's open to other men, and she's not keeping herself tsanua. She exposes herself in ways that are meant to attract other men, and that leads to the husband's sense that he cannot really trust her complete fidelity to him, and therefore the marriage itself is damaged, and the ksuva ceases to be meaningful. So the following women would lose their ketuvah, and he can be megarisher without having any consequences. Veret al dat Moshe v'Yehudit, a woman who is, now when we say dat Moshe, we don't mean religion. The fact that she goes ahead and she's overt on religion, as we'll see, is not grounds for divorce. Or at least maybe grounds for divorce, but is that ground for losing her ketuvah? But what we're talking about over here, in terms of dat, datea melech einam namosim, like Haman said, a dat is an accepted behavior in a particular context. So the dat Moshe that we're talking about over here are those behaviors that are appropriate to marriage, which are spelled out in the Torah. But we don't worry about the fact that it's the Torah. That isn't the point. Because otherwise we would just call it anybody who's over on a D'oraisa, which is not true. It has to be the modality of behavior that is set aside already by Moshe Rabbeinu, although what we mean is we've discovered it in the Torah. And Yehudit means that it's just the Jewish way of living. This is the Jewish way of marriage. Do we have any mocker for it? No, but it's an evolved behavior in which it's accepted that this is the way that people who are married behave, and that therefore in its violation, it's very important to hear this. It's not that she's done something wrong and we're going to punish her. That isn't the point. The point is that the violation of norms of behavior are indicative of her looseness in sexual matters, because those are the norms we're talking about. And that type of looseness makes a reliable marriage impossible. And the whole point of the ksuva was there in order to ensure that what we're talking about is a kedushin that is backed up by mutual level of commitments to this aspect of reliability and ne'emanut in the relationship. That's why we're referring specifically to Dat Moshe. Has nothing to do with the Isser D'oraisa or the Minhag that's involved. So what do we mean by Dat Moshe? Well, let's say if she would be Ma'achilato She'enu Me'usar, or she would be Mishamashto Nida, or Lo Kotzala Chala, or Noderet Ve'ena Mekayemet. Now, each one of these things is only part of Overet al Dat Moshe because it affects him. It means that she is messing up his life. And that is completely different from her doing something wrong, obviously. So if we're talking over here, we'll talk about the netter aspect in a moment. We're talking about over here that she gives him non-kosher food. So how is he supposed to live with a woman that he's not able to eat in her kitchen? I mean, that's not a marriage. Or if she's going to sleep with him as a Nida and pretend that she's not a Nida, and then he can't sleep with her. And so on and so forth. So these are all things. The Mishnah is taking examples only of things that directly affect him and have nothing to do with her level of religiosity. Now, how about this one? Noderet ve'ena mekayemet, which over there you would say has nothing to do with him, but it does. Now, as the Gemara will explain, a woman who makes nedarim and isn't mekayim can be gorem the death of her children. And so because of that, it certainly does affect him. And what do we mean by Dat Yehudit? That simply is the question of whether she is going to violate accepted norms of behavior that reflect on her fidelity and on her sexual taira. So what would we mean? Let's say she's Yotza v'Rosh HaParua. She goes out with her hair uncovered. She's Tova B'Shuk. Now, each one of these things is going to be defined precisely in the Gemara. She's Tova B'Shuk. So she does her spinning in the open market. Again, obviously, that is nothing wrong with that. We're going to explain it. Umidaberet in kol adam. She talks with everybody. Again, we're going to explain that. And Abishol omer, af hamikalelet yoldav bifanav. Even a woman who curses out his parents in front of him is something that cannot be lived with. And therefore, it's considered to be tearing apart the marriage. Rabbi Tarfon omer afa kolanit, a noisy woman. Vezo kolanit, nekishim medaberet betoch beita ushcheinei shom im kola. That she speaks in the house and the neighbors hear what she's saying. Now the Gemara is going to speak about this. Obviously, it doesn't mean exactly what it says. It means that she will speak about issues that reflect on their intimate relations in a way that the neighbors are going to hear, and that makes it impossible for him to live with her intimately. So now let's take a look at each one of these cases. Ma'achilato she'eno mu'usar. She's feeding him food that essentially isn't kosher because it wasn't ma'aser. So, I mean, how did he eat it in the first place is the question. And if he did eat it, so then how is it that he suddenly came to discover that the food that he had before wasn't ma'aser? I mean, it's a little bit, obviously, we could say crazy case if there were witnesses and so on, but I mean, that's really weird. So we want to talk about sort of a standard situation that such a thing like this would come about. So hechidam, idiyada, did he know that it wasn't meiser? So then he shouldn't have eaten it, nifrash. The idiloyada, minoyada, how did he find out after he ate it, how did he find out that it wasn't meiser? It's simple. Let's say he asked her, is this meiser? And she said, yeah, I asked the Kohen to take it out for me. So I don't know how to take it. You know, it's very complicated, but he took care of the whole thing. And then he goes and asks that Kohen. And he said, I don't know what she's talking about. I never spoke to her about it. So obviously, the food that he had eaten was actually not kosher. That would be the case. What about the case of Mishamashto Nida? Hechidami. I mean, does he know that she's a Nida? So he shouldn't have slept with her. Nifrosh. And if he didn't know, how does he all of a sudden know? I mean, the halacha is that he has a right to rely on her. So somebody comes along and says, well, you know, she really wasn't wasn't Tahora. If she says she's Tahora, don't we rely on her? The Omer Rabbi Chinen Abarkano Omer Shmuel Minayin LeNidashu Soferet LeAtzma. How do we know? She doesn't need any type of rabbinical approbation that says that she is Tahora. If she says that I counted the days of Nida and I took care of it, that's sufficient, because it says the Sofra La Shivat Yami. She just said she counts 7 days. But the Sofra La, it means she counts this to herself. She doesn't have to give an accounting to any type of bureau of accountings of Nida. And therefore, if she says that she is Tahora, so how do we suddenly say she isn't? La means La Atzma. So now how do we know ex post facto that she wasn't Tahora? Lo tzricha do amra le ploni chacham tiher li et adam. The same situation we had before. Suppose she says, look, I had a bleed, but I went to so-and-so, the Rav, and he said that this colored blood is not metamini. Then he goes and he asks the Rav, and the Rav says, I don't know what she's talking about. She never came to me. It's the same situation. Also, v'shayla v'shtakach shikra. Turns out she was lying, and she had never asked a shayla. Or it could be cases like Rav Yehuda, which is a big chiddush. And that is, Rav Yehuda says that once a woman is who's a kanida b'shchedotea, the neighbors say that she is a nida. So they see her wearing the clothes that she usually wears when she's a nida, or taking out a package of tampons, or whatever it is that neighbors are basically shared with each other their situation. Then she's hulzika. And if the husband sleeps with her, then he would be lokala mishum nida. So this is a bichlal. Remember that we can use a chazaka to establish a fact in Bezdin. We can't use a chazaka to establish the fact that he did the iser, but we can use a chazaka to establish the fact that there is an iser. So having established that she is a nida, now if we have Adim that he slept with this nida, then he would be chayev malchus for doing so. So if he's chayev malchus, obviously that means that we're accepting the fact that she's a nida. And he, in this case, where we have evidence that that was the situation and he didn't know at the time, so then he would be able to cancel her ksuva. Another case the Mishnah gave, lo kotsa la chala. She doesn't take off chala after she makes her bread. Say, hechidani, idi yada. So if the husband knows, so then nifroshi could take off the chala. Idi lo yada. How does he know now after they ate the bread that now it was tevel? No tzricha, the same idea. The armor lay ploni gabalti kein la etayisa. She took the yis. Remember that they would have in those days, they would have mixers, but the mixers weren't electric. They were human mixers. So that was a gabal. So she said she spoke to the gabal, and the gabal took care of taking off challah. Then he goes and he asks the gabal, and the gabal says, I don't know what we're talking about. Okay, everybody's going to say I'm crazy that all four people that are making this l'chaim are all put together in a row, but okay, it has nothing to do with Zoom. Zoom knows nothing. Yeah. Okay, tell it to the Marines, boys. So anyway, this is the same situation. So we find out that she lied, and in fact, it was Teva that she was feeding him. And then we had this other issue. Now, this other issue violates the pattern that we've had because it seems to be talking about being a bad girl. So if she's a bad girl, he has a right to take away her ksuva. But that's not what we said about all these other cases. This, we're talking about the case where what she does is she's no deret v'ena mekayemet. I mean, you might as well give any number of examples, you know. You could say she turns on the lights on Shabbos. I don't know. You go, well, I mean, whatever mitzvah she's doing. Why are we talking about nedarim then? And clearly the whole point of the Mishnah, and this is actually, the Rush speaks this out at great length, that you see clearly from here that the fact that, well, I didn't want to marry a girl that's not religious, that's not considered to be a violation of the marriage. That's quite amazing. So we're not talking about religion over here. That's the point of dot. That's why it's not religion. It's dot. So the idea over here would be, therefore, says the Gemara, that somehow or other a neder is going to destroy the marriage on some level. How is that exactly? Oh, that's because, since it says in the pasuk, "Al titenet picha lachtiat b'sarecha," do not allow your mouth to destroy your own flesh. And then, when the malach comes to take away your children, "Al tomar lifnei ha malach kishkagahi," Don't claim this was all an accident. Lami ikzof Elohim al kolecha v'chibelet ma'aseh yadecha. So v'chibelet ma'aseh yadecha ezo ma'aseh yadav shel adam. What would be the ma'aseh yadayim of a human being? His children. And therefore, basically, she is making it impossible to be married to her because she could be, chas v'chalila, causing a din against her family. And because of that, he has a right, in fact, to have that tiny, not because she's bad, but because this could affect his children. Rav Nachman Amar Mihocha. Lashav, this is Bepashas, the Pasuk is saying, Lashav hiketi et b'neichem. But we're learning it, Lashav hiketi et b'neichem. Because of Iske Shav, Shvua Sheker, Shvua Shav, we are punished with Chas v'Chalila, with children. Okay, now, the question is whether this is everyone Shita. Because in the Braita it says, Rabbi Meir would say that Kol Yodea B'Ishto, Shenoderet V'Eina Mekayemet, Yachzor V'Yedirena. This is very strange. Somebody knows that his wife makes Nedarim. She doesn't keep those Nedarim, and he wants to make sure that he finds out about these Nedarim, and he makes sure that they don't take place. And she's not telling him. So what's he supposed to do? If he doesn't hear the Neder, he can't be made for the Neder. He can't give a general hafara for Nedarim. He can't be made for Nedarim in advance. So how could he possibly save himself from this type of situation? It says Rabbi Meir, he should make the Neder again. What? What are you talking about? Yedirena? How does that help? No. I mean, he should get her mad. That's the point. It was whatever it is that she's making these Nedarim out of some type of emotional response. Okay. Do press her buttons. You know how to press her button? You know how to press her button. So, Yachzor v'yaknitena. Press her buttons again. And this time, she'll make the Neder right in your face, and then you'll be able to be made for the Neder, you see? So this, in other words, obviously we're assuming that the time of the first Neder was already passed. Now he wants to find out, okay, what kind of things is she saying? So then you got to press her buttons to find out what kind of things she's saying, and then you can be made for the Neder. But you don't tell her you were made for the Neder, obviously. You're made for the Neder. She thinks the Neder is chal, and she's screwing you over, and she's going to be over on the Neder. But actually, there is no Neder. She's a bad girl, and that's considered to be, like the Merum is in the Pusik, that she thinks she's being b'chal the Neder, and she needs Hashem Yislachla. That's her business. I don't care about that. I just care about keeping myself clean, you know? So in that case, Kadesh Tidor b'fanav v'yaferla. So then, according to Rabbi Meir, it would appear that there is a way to protect yourself, and you don't have to be open to the danger of this woman going ahead and chas v'chalila bringing dinim against your children. So that's not like what we just said. Amru lo, so they said to Rabbi Meir, "Ein adam dar im nachash pitfifa." It's all very nice, you know. You're saying, "Well, you can always protect yourself." Yeah, but that one minute that you're not looking, you're living with a snake in a cage. And one woman, one minute you turn aside, the snake gets you. She'll get you somehow or other. Don't worry about it. So even if there would be a way to protect against this particular thing, she'll always get you. Tanya, Ya Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kol hayodea biishto. Person knows that his wife doesn't take off challah. So he also has an etzah. He should just always take off challah. So then the same thing is true about the point about the challah, right? I mean, if Rabbi Meir is saying you can protect yourself from a neder, then Rabbi Yehuda is saying you can protect yourself from non-kosher bread in your house. Just make sure that you take off challah. Amrulo, it's the same situation. Ain't a darim nachash pikvifa. And he said, well, you don't think she's going to get you one day? That she's going to bake some bread? You're not going to be knowing about it. She'll put it in the bread box. You'll sit and tell you what. There's no way to protect yourself at something that's a continual problem. But mandamasinla aha. So if we read the case that you could still protect yourself, which is what Rabbi Yehuda says, in the case of the challah. So koshikain in the case of the nedarim, because nedarim, I mean, challah is like every day, you know, you get in trouble at any point during the day where she bakes bread or something. So then it would be much easier to protect yourself from the darim. But if it was only benogea, the damage to children that could be caused by making a neder not being b'kayim, he, Rabbi Meir, would never say that you could actually rely on taking off challah every time she bakes on your own. You don't have to worry about her messing you up. That's not true, because it's constant. At some point or another, you're going to take out a lachmania that she baked. You won't even realize it's fresh lachmania. You'll eat it, and there was no challah taken. You must admit, this is quite remarkable. I mean, I know of a number of marriages where one partner is religious and the other partner isn't religious. And the Mishnah is basically saying that that's not ground for divorce. But in other words, we don't care about the fact that she's not religious. We care about the fact that her unwillingness to watch out for your kashrus and what's going to happen to you or to your children, that's the only issue that we have. And again, that's because the idea of the ketuvah is the preservation of the marriage. If you guys can work out the relationship in such a way that the differences of your belief systems and so on are not an ikuv to your marriage, that's not our business. That's your business. The ksuva's business is not, losing a ksuva is not a punishment. It's simply because the undermining of the marriage is ipso facto antithetical to the meaning of the ksuva. That's the point. If your marriage isn't being undermined by the differences of belief, what do we have to do with that? This is a completely different take, you see. That's what the Mishnah is giving over. People have this idea of like, we'll punish a woman because she doesn't cover her hair, and that's against the halacha. That's not the point. And it isn't even the point that it's the halacha. It isn't the issue of a halacha. It's only the issue of dat, which is a completely different thing, which, by the way, is also the source of many big machlokas about this whole thing. I'm sure you know about the way somebody, Brucey, please mute. The psak of the Aruch HaShulchan, that where the social structure is such that this is not the dot that people keep, then it's not b'chai of you in terms of dot yodit or so on, right? So in other words, let's say, and he takes it one step further. He says it's even, which is a much bigger chiddush, and well, many people stop reading the Aruch HaShulchan because of this psak. But what he wanted to taina is that the very definition of what level of exposure is considered to be inappropriate and something that would cause a person to be more focused on sexual things than on what he's supposed to be focused on, even that varies socially. So that even though we have an iser of, let's say, saying Dovah Shakadush, you're not allowed to say Kriyat Shema in front of a woman with uncovered hair. But what about if everybody goes around with uncovered hair? So then the question is, what is that considered to be something that is in context, inappropriate? So he, Taina, is that no, all of these things that are not actual erva are indeed defined by the context. Just like this whole idea of dot is a definition of the way in which things evolve in people's behavior. So this wouldn't allow you to say Kriyat Shema in a nudist colony, possibly, but in the nudist colony that passes for the normal street outside, it might. Because over there, you're talking about a level of exposure that's inappropriate. Okay, anyway, so this is fascinating. So when you learn the Mishnah, you learn the Gemara, you see a totally different way of understanding what's going on in this sugya. All right, so continuing now. When we're talking about dat yehudit, so what is the norms? Dat in the sense of norms. What are the norms of the way that Jews behave? Well, when they imagine she goes outside with her hair uncovered. Her hair uncovered? Why do we call that dat yehudit? Why isn't that called dat Moshe? Isn't that a deraisa? Dichtiv, ufara et rosh ha'isha. So in a case of a sota, so when she's taken to the Beis HaMikdash, one of the things that's done to her is that we uncover her hair and we're mezalzel in her the same way that she was mezalzel inappropriate behavior. And remember, that behavior is enough on its own to justify saying to her, at kisatit, as the Rishonim explained. because we're not talking about adultery. We're talking about behavior that leads to adultery. That's the point. Is it appropriate for you to be alone with this guy when your husband is saying he doesn't like the relationship between you? Don't you understand that that itself is kisatit? So you're undermining the whole concept of fidelity and the ne'amonus which a marriage is mechayev. That's the point. So here too, since it says that what we do to the sota is that we're pora at Rosh HaYisha, Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael, Azara Levinot Yisrael, Shelo Yitzu Beferu HaRosh. This is basically an Azara not to go out with your hair uncovered. How in the world is this an Azara not to go out with your hair uncovered? What would that possibly mean? All it says over here is that they uncover her hair, right? So Rashi, and this fits directly into what we've been talking about, Rashi says that the idea, this is his second shot that he feels is the ikar. The idea is, Shmamina ein derech benot Yisrael, let's say, broad Rosh. In other words, if part of the ceremony over here of the sota is that we uncover her hair, so obviously her hair wasn't uncovered before. This is an azara. Where does it say, don't go out without covered hair? That makes no sense. Of course it does, because the meaning of azara in these circumstances is only to establish the dot. That's the point. So if the Torah is saying uncover her hair, the Torah is taking for granted that her hair was covered. So that proves I have to cover it? No, it proves that that's the dot. Therefore, in terms of the ksuva, of course, you're violating the dot. That means that you do not have the standards of the types of behaviors that will protect your marriage. And we all know this to be true, that the level of the protection of the marriage is really a function of the level of kedusha and tznius that people assume is meant to be part of what a woman who is married is going to behave with. So the looser that is, the looser the marriage is. It's very simple. And then it said, and of course, as society breaks down in these areas, marriages break down in these areas all the time. So then divorce becomes a standard. And or worse than that, adultery becomes a standard, as it is today, even among the most religious people, with whole communities where adultery is standard. Wife swapping is standard, which is astonishing. How is such a thing possible? It's possible because of the fact that there's a complete breakdown in what it means to have ne'emanut to a marriage. Okay, so that would make it much easier to understand how we could possibly call this dat Moshe. So this is the point. And this is, again, I can't help but keep stressing it because it's such a misunderstanding on the street about these sugyas. That a woman, you know, you have all these women, all these feminists writing, well, you know, where does it say you're mechuyev to cover? None of that is the point. That's the whole issue. So that the entire approach and questioning is absolutely meaningless. Anyway, so the Gemara says, look, as far as the Torah is concerned, the concept of having the head covered is nothing to do with the idea of hair being invisible. It has to do with the idea of showing the difference. That's the point. So what they used to do is they had these, Rashi understands it as follows, that they had these baskets that you would carry things in. And the basket was made in such a way that some of it fits over your head. And on top of it, you have your sewing things and so on. So, right? And so it's like a double basket. So the basket is kalata. And obviously you could see your hair through the basket weave. But that doesn't matter because all we're interested in is an assertion of the fact that I'm off limits. That's the idea. So Midiraisa, that's sufficient. But what became the norm in terms of the behavior, which is called dat Yehudit, is afilu kalatananiyah. So you need to have a real complete covering of the hair, not where you see it. You see the hair through the covering. Amar Rabbi Yossi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, that actually, once a woman is wearing kalata, she's wearing this weave, so then that's not considered to be a head uncovered. Where are we talking about? Because, I mean, we just learned the exact opposite, right? So are we talking about walking outside? Didn't we just say that that is the definition of that yudit? Ella, what are you telling me? That it's good enough to wear a basket weave over your hair if you walk out into your own backyard? What are you, crazy? Your own backyard? She's got to wear a basket on her head in her own backyard. Well, I can tell you one thing. If that's what it means, then there ain't a single woman who is actually being careful with her marriage. I mean, lo hinach debat Avram Avinu sheyoshevet tachat ba'ala. We should cancel all marriages. What woman doesn't go outdoors to her own backyard and her own porch without covering her hair? This is crazy. Are you going to tell me a woman has to keep her hair covered in her own home and in her own backyard? Even though people do that, then okay, so that's a midas chasidus, and it's very nice, and you know, shaloro korot beta et sarad, and that's how she had this wonderful, all the children became kohanim gedolim. Okay, I understand that you may have women that are super duper extra sensitive, but certainly what you're going to call that a violation of dat yehudit? To walk into your own backyard? So then mamonavshach, what is it talking about? In the shuk, we just learned that it's not enough and it's a violation of dat yehudit. In your own backyard, it's completely okay. So what in the world was this psak talking about? Answers the Gemara. What we're talking about is between those two extremes, obviously. Amar Abaye v'Tamer of Kahana, what we're talking about is going out of your own backyard through the back alley, you know, so the neighbors are connected with this little mavoi, which happens very often. She wants to go visit a neighbor, you know, and she goes from her backyard to the neighbor's backyard through the alleyway. So the garbage truck might be coming at that point, you know, and they'll see her with her hair uncovered. No, Mela. So there, it's enough to have kalata. And there was no minhag called dat yudit to cover hair in an alley. That's all that Rabbi Zera was saying, which makes a which is Rabbi Yochanan, that it's that is considered to be enough, so that we have three dargas in her own home or backyard, in the alley where kalata, and then we have in the shuk where there's a dat yehudit that kalata is insufficient, even though in the Torah we don't see that kalata is insufficient. So that's why we're calling it dat yehudit, which is the higher level of shmira that has been accepted. The next case, we said that a violation of dat yehudit is to do spinning in the outdoors. What in the world is wrong with spinning? The tovah b'shuk. It means that she, in order to, you know, do her spinning without any kind of sleeves that are getting in the way, so she exposes her arms and she doesn't wear sleeves. Rav Chisda Omar Avimi, that's not the point. Point over here is that you can turn spinning into something suggestive. You can? Yeah. Because what she does is that she spins along her thighs in such a way that the threads go between her legs. And that's her draws the eye to between her legs. And that's not nice. Tosfos says it's also possible to use attractive threads. It's talking about like red threads, whatever. But whatever is considered to be suggestive in that way, that it's just sneaky way, in a sense. In other words, it's clear to everybody, we know what you're doing, but we're pretending that it isn't that kind of thing, right? So what she's really trying to do is to bring attention to her body. So that's betova virat keneged paneh, and it goes down across her genitals. We always use the word paneh as a euphemism for paneh shamata. Umedaberet im kol adam. What does that mean, in kol adam? It means she plays around. She's like, does a lot of flirting. So she's misachekas im bachurim. She tries to attract young men, and that is very inappropriate for a married woman. But my rabbi barbachana, I was once walking behind Rav Ukva. So zim lechadav gazina batu de Rav Ukva, chazita lehi arviya dave yatva. There was this Arab woman who was sitting over there, and kashadia pilcha. So she was spinning her spindle. And tova, and she had the thread keneged paneha, which is exactly what we spoke about. It's big suggestive spinning, and you know we talk about spinning in the same way, right? We use spinning as a term for getting people involved with you. It's actually based here on this idea. And then what she did was when she saw us giving the chazaditinan psik de la pilcha, so she broke the thread off of her spindle. And she throws it on the road as if it dropped. So this gives her an excuse to talk to the boys, right? So she says, hey, boy, hulam, havli pelach, give me my spindle. So Rabbi Ukva said something about her, which was a way of letting us know that this is what is meant in the Mishnah by behavior X or Y. But we don't know what he said. So my Omar, but what did he say? Ravina said, well, this is an example of the concept of Tova B'Shuk, because of the way that means that Rav Ukva was going along with Rav Chista's approach, who said that the meaning is that the thread goes between her legs. And that's what she was doing. And that would be the indication that he also holds that's the pshat, as opposed to the pshat that she rolls up her sleeves. And the Rabbanan Amrei, that no, what he made, the comment that he made, is you want to know what's meant by midaberet and kol adam? It's like this Arab woman over here. That would be what it is like. So that would mean that that itself, even a little trick like this, is also called flirty, even though she didn't really engage him in any kind of direct conversation, but she was attempting to flirt with him. You know, you start with something, some excuse. What time is it? So hand me my pellet. Abba Shalom, the next thing we had in the Mishnah was Af HaMekalelet Yoldav B'fanav. So somebody who curses, a woman who curses her husband's parents in his face, Omer V'yonom Shmuel, it doesn't really have to be directly. It could be Mekalelet Yoldav B'fnei Moldav. Somebody who curses the parent in front of his children. It doesn't have to be in front of him. So like she says, as we're going to Omer Rabba, so she says to their grandson, you know, I hope a lion eats up your granddaddy. Okay. That's if you live in Botswana, you know. So, but, you know, every society has got its way of cursing out the in-laws. All right. This is pretty creative. You know, he should only be eaten up by a lion. That no good thing. But the idea over here is that a grandchild is the same. And this is V'simanecha, Ephraim u'Menashe, Kiruvein v'Shimon Yehuda. Yaakov Avinu says, it's the same thing. It's as if it's mine. So something is true over here. If she speaks to the grandchild and she speaks about the Saba in front of the grandchild, that's just as bad. And therefore, may the lion eat up your grandfather is good enough to get rid of her. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Afa Kolanit, a noisy woman. What's a Kolanit? Omer Yudom Shmuel. It means mashmat kolalis ke tashmish, that when they're talking about issues that have to do with intimate relations, they get into fights and it's in a way that the neighbors hear. Who knows what kind of insulting thing she says about his sexual performance or about whether she wants to sleep with him or he never does enough or whatever. I mean, that's absolutely crazy. Are you supposed to live with the neighbors listening in to fights about sex? I mean, it's awful. So that's what it's referring to. And in the Braisa, it says, it's talking about b'mishameshet b'chatzer zu v'nishma kola b'chatzer acheret. So basically, what she is, Rashi understands, which is clear in the next piece, we're not talking about a woman who is one of these big sex moaners, and everybody can hear when she's having sex in one chatzer, and they can hear her in the next chatzer. And everybody knows how awful it is to have neighbors like that. But the idea over here is that she is suffering from sexual relations. So she is in pain and people hear her. I understand, but then that is more of a question of mumim, isn't it? I mean, she's got a problem, and then that we're going to have a whole Mishnah coming up discussing the issues of having a mum. So that's got, I mean, she's got a physical problem there. You're right. The meaning is, like we said before, it's someone who speaks loudly about private issues and the neighbors are able to hear. And this brings us to another one of those Richie moments. And of course, not coincidentally, Zoom has taken very good care of Richie by putting Doc right on top. An amazing coincidence, wouldn't you say, Rich? Such an amazing coincidence that Richie can't figure out how to unmute, and we're going to go straight to Doc. Ha! Take it away, Doc.
Zuk ta helika Mishnah.
Excellent. I don't know how Barnea thinks that this is going to be impressive, but okay. Thank heavens we've got some serious stuff next to you. Hamekadesh ta'isha. Now, let's say somebody makes a beferish tonight that he does not want this kedushin to be chal in the event that she has nedarim that are on her. And it turns out, that she had made nedarim. Then the kedusha is not chal, like any tanai. How about if he didn't make any kind of tanai? He just married a woman, konsas stam, and it turns out that she has these nedarim on her. So then tetzei shelo biktuva. Then she loses her ktuva because it's assumed that a person does not want to marry a woman that has got nedarim. How about if he makes a pferisha tonight? Amanacha imba mumit. And we're going to see how we define mumim in a moment. And this is why we were asking, why don't we consider the situation of the kol anit the way we define it to be a mum? Amanacha imba mumin, minim tuba mumin. So then it's a violation of a condition. And because of that, the kedushin isn't chal. That, these questions are very much a problem, both of these. Because remember, we had the idea of simpon before, and we said that if it turns out she has a simpon, then it'll mean that she was eating truma as a Yisraelite because the marriage wasn't kosher. Remember we said that? So doesn't that mean that without any conditions, the discovery of a mum is enough to cancel a because of an ansade kind of thing? It's an umdana. So why do we need specifically a tanai over here about mumin? The same thing was true about nedarim, as Tosis points out. We've had just recently, ef shili beisha nadranit. So, I mean, that we say is a valetina. Ef shili beisha nadranit. Wouldn't that be the equivalent of an umdana of making a tanai? So basically, we're going to be making differences over here between the chalos of the ksuva, which is a mamanus issue, and we can talk about the umdana that we have, versus the question of whether the kedushin bichlal would actually take place as we get into the sugya more. But this is a rich sugya because of that obvious contradiction. So if he makes it tonight, amanacha in bamumi, nimtzu bamumim in a mekudeshes. What if he marries her star? Kansas stam, and then it turns out she does have these mumim. So then tetse shelo biktuva. So now it isn't clear what we're talking about over here, whether we mean the kansa in both of these cases. Do we mean kansa after having made the tanai and the kedushin, that then he's kansa without making a tanai to the chuppah? Or is this just stam? A different case. If he actually marries her, including the kedushin, without any type of tanai, I mean, the kansa is not an addition to the tanai that's made earlier in the kedushin. Because remember, we had that question. If somebody does make a tanai, and then he goes ahead to the chuppah, does that mean that he's now mochel the tanai? Well, that's part of what we need to look into over here. Is this all one case, or is each one of these cases consisting of two separate dinim? One where he did make it tonight, and one where he didn't make it tonight. Okay, so that we will see. What defines a mum? Kol hamumim haposlim bekohanim, poslim binashim. Take a look at the list. There's 70 mumim. Take a look at the list that affect kohanim, and you will see what we mean by the discovery of a mum. This is a little bit strange, says the Gemara, because I was learning Kiddushin the other day with my kid, having him memorize the Mishnayos, and I remember learning this exact Mishnah word for word. How come we have the same Mishnah in Masechet Kiddushin as we have over here? It's not Nami Gabi Kiddushin Kaha Gavna, word for word. Why would Rebbe put the same Mishnah in the Shas twice? Because there's two completely different dinim. Here in Ksuvas, we need to tell me what the din would be legabi the ksuva. And therefore, we mentioned the case of the kedushin as the kedushin chal. So tana kedushin atu ksuva. So because of that, we mentioned the din of the kedushin because we're going to be talking about whether you have to pay ksuva or not. Over there in kedushin, we need the dinim of the kedushin. What's the kedushin chal? So how's the kedushin? It's tricholei. And therefore, we talk all of these dinim of the ksuvas atu kedushin. So that is standard for Rebbe to do. Omer Rebbe Yochanan Mishum Rebbe Shimon ben Yotzadik. You know, when we talk about finding nedarim, what type of nedarim do we mean? Be'ilan nedarim amru. I mean, let's say she makes a neder, I will not go to the library. Is that a neder? You know, libraries are usher on me. So we're talking specifically, says Rabbi Shimon ben Yotzadak, about nedarim like shelo tochal basar, shelo tishteh b'yayin, shelo titkashet b'bigdei tzivonim, as we mentioned earlier, because those kind of things are actually damaging to the relationship in the marriage. Tanya nami hachi, be'ele nedarim amru, dvarim sheyesh b'hem inui nefesh, shelo tochal basar, shelo tishteh yayin, Now, is this a definition of what we mean, discovering that a woman had nedarim when there was no specific condition, man?
Then he never said, I don't want any
nedarim. Is this a limitation of what's considered to be nedarim when the person did say, I'm taking you in marriage on condition that you don't have nedarim? I mean, those are two totally different approaches. And this is what Rav Papa wanted to know. Haviva Rav Papa. Well, what part of the mission are we talking about over here? Hi, Eli Maresh, if we're talking about where he made a specific t'nai, why should it matter to us what the netter is? I mean, if he says, I don't want a netter, so then anything, even if she can't go to the library. I mean, he said, I don't like the idea of ushering yourself with a netter. So afilu kol milei nami. Therefore, it must be talking about in the Seifa, what type of netter is considered to be an excuse for her losing a ksuva, that everybody would understand? I can't be expected to want to give a ksuva to a woman that I'm not going to be able to live with. That is talking about where the netter is going to affect your ability to live with her. The question of whether she goes to the library or not is not considered to be a marriage-threatening type of netter, unless you said so. Ravashi says no. Even on the Reisha, where the guy said, I don't want any nedarim, because what is meant by that is mita dekapti ba'inche avikapeda kapeda, but mita delo kapti ba'inche lo avikapeda kapeda. Even though the guy says, look, when I said I don't want nedarim, I mean I don't want nedarim, darn it, don't come tell me. So we say to him, listen, whatever is considered to be a norm is a norm. You can't say that you had in mind a netter about not going to the library. That's not normal. Now, Tosis points out, obviously, if he made a specific condition to that effect, that I don't want a woman who has a netter not to use toothpicks. I don't give a hang what you said. If that was the condition, that was the condition. The question over here is, do we understand the meaning of the statement that doesn't want nedarim in the context of norms? And that's the pshat that Ravashi is saying. You can't say, to me, that's bad. That's it's bottle your machshava. If you defined it as being bad, as the actual t'nai, obviously, then it would be ma'akev the kedushin. Itma. Now, the question is, as we said before, how do we understand the cases in the Mishnah? So we know that we had this big machlokas about if somebody made a kedushin on t'nai, and then he goes and he takes her to the chuppah and he lives with her as man and wife, and then he didn't say anything about this t'nai. It's as if he forgot all about the t'nai. And what's the din? Does that mean that he's basically now taking her without the t'nai, or is he relying on the t'nai, aforementioned t'nai? So Rav says she's still going to need a get, even though he didn't repeat the t'nai. The idea over here is that there may not be a ksuva, that's true, but a get you're going to need, because for that we are looking at it as if it looks like, we're going to see in a moment, it's not that, but it looks like he no longer cares about the t'nai, which is strange, because if he no longer cares about the t'nai, then it should also mean that she does get a ksuva. We're going to talk about that in a second, but she needs a get. Says Rav Shmuel, says, no, she doesn't even need to get. Because if he had initially said, I'm taking you with this condition, he doesn't need to repeat it every time. It's quite clear, I'm taking you on this condition. So it looks like Rav is saying that by taking her without the t'nai, he no longer cares about the t'nai. I'm Rabbi, and no, that's not the point. Lo tema time de Rav kimin dekatsa stamach uliach le t'nai. Don't think that it means that he was meichel the t'nai. Because if it would, then why did he talk about only needing a get? It would mean that he would have to give a ksuva. So obviously the t'nai is still chal in terms of, do I really want a woman like this? So then what the heck is he doing under the chuppah? And why did he sleep with her? Oh, that's the whole point. That Rav says, look, time of the Rav is, so therefore what we're assuming is that if he's ready to actually have intercourse with her, so he's thinking to himself, okay, so look, I'm not going to sit here making a big fuss under the chuppah and, you know, like, is it, did you have any net or whatever the time was, right? So, okay, fine. So I'm willing to give her kiddushin in order that we shouldn't just be sleeping together casually. I don't like that kind of thing. And therefore, I want there to be a kiddushin. So therefore, you need to have a get. But the fact is that I made it very clear. I don't want a woman who has this particular issue. And so when it comes to the ksuva, that's still binding. It's not that he's meichel the tanai. It's that he doesn't want to be sleeping with someone casually. So because of that, he makes the kedushin a kedushin. And that's the point. Therefore, Rav said, to the chaymen I get. But when it comes to the ksuva, the tanai is still valid.